Hello and welcome to Chats, a television podcast, season 12, Peaks Chats, The Return. My name is Magellan and I'm joined by my very own Lenovo ThinkPad user, it's Alan.
Hey, I feel called out personally. I want you to know, I want the listener to know that Magellan is referring to the fact that I just got a work laptop, my first ever work laptop, and it is literally Duncan Todd's Lenovo ThinkPad. When I went to the IT people and they're like, here's your cool shiny laptop. We spent a week prepping for you. I was like, oh boy. And then I saw it and I was like, dog, really? Come on. I'm going to get a red cube on my fucking laptop and then I'm going to get told to kill someone. I'm going to try and take a picture at some point with it, making me look like Duncan Todd. I don't know if I have the suit jacket for it, but we're going to make something happen.
It's more in the expression than it is in the suit jacket, I think.
A deep existential distress, you mean?
Yeah. Can you pull that off? Can you do one of those?
I work a 9-to-5, dog.
Okay. All right.
Easy,
there you go.
Easy. How are you, pal?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I'm doing totally fine. Yep. This episode of, well, we'll talk about it. And we are going to talk about it with someone who's joining us for this episode and our entire coverage of The Return. Their dream is to go to that place. You know, the one where it all began. It's Ryan.
Hello.
Hey. Do you like that song at the end of the episode?
That's fine.
It made me want to watch Mulholland Drive again instead of this episode.
You know what? No, I'll be honest. I completely forgot what it was.
It was Rebecca Del Rio.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Well, there we go. Let's talk about this episode of Twin Peaks The Return, which was part 10, which has the tagline, Laura is the One. It was directed by David Lynch, written by Frost and Lynch, aired.
Oh. No respect to Rebecca Del Rio. She's great. I just don't like that particular song.
Fair and good. We're all in agreement there, I think. This episode, by the way, aired on July 16, 2017. For those who want to fully recreate the experience of watching this, just turn up the heat really, really high, get sweaty, get angry, and then watch this episode, I guess. Anyway.
Stay angry.
What did we think about Laura is the One? Is this the one? No, that we like?
This ain't it, dog. This is not the one. I was definitely disappointed. Yeah. We went into this episode knowing Ryan had given us the heads up, like, hey, this one is quite bad. And you know, it's bad in different ways than like bad season two is. We always say here that like the worst television can be, or any like artistic medium is boring. And there are actually parts of this episode that I felt were a little bit boring. I think it sags in parts. But more so, it's just a deep, deep, like, annoying discomfort. Like, I feel like we get it. And not only do we get it, but we're already sick of how much we get it. And now we're adding another layer of how much we're sick of getting it. And it just feels like, did we need this? Does this episode even need to be here in the grand scheme of things? I know... We get a little bit of lore stuff here. We get some development. We get names for characters who haven't had names before. So, like, technically, literally, you should watch this episode. But, man, oh, man, it's a hard one to get through on multiple fronts. I was having a rough time watching it, for sure.
Yeah. Ryan, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, in my memory, I marked this one as one of the bad ones. And, yeah, I was right. There are maybe, like, one or two, three scenes I would keep. But otherwise, it's not good. I don't like this episode.
I think in discussing it, we're going to end up making a sort of machete cut of this one.
And it's like, you know, it is well shot, it is well directed, it is well acted, but the things that they are portraying and the way they are portraying them sucks. So.
And then there's like stuff that's good. Like you said, there's stuff that I'm like, wait, that was... I have that exact reaction often in here. Meg, what about you?
It's just a misery parade. Like, I don't know. Exactly. It's like if you took that one episode where Richard Horne runs over the kid and something other awful happens, and you were like, what if that was a whole episode, more of that? No, thank you. I don't really want to see Richard Horne go rough up Sylvia Horne and say horrible things to her. I don't want to watch, you know, Amanda Seyfried's boyfriend be an abusive boyfriend. I don't want to see a lot of this stuff in this episode. And it also just felt like, you know, amidst all that, this still felt to me like an episode of Twin Peaks in the sense mm-hmm. that it's trying to address and portray the sorts of themes or scenarios that were present in the original series. And I can't tell if it's just that, like, they're not doing it as well, or it's this sort of like worse version, or if there's something to the fact that, like, being able to portray things in such kind of realistic, visceral detail makes things much more unpleasant. You know, like if we had seen, for example, Shelley and Leo's relationship in visceral modern Showtime detail, it's not like that was any better written or portrayed in the original series. It just was like shot a little bit more like an old TV show. I don't know. So,
well, yeah. Well, and yeah. It's also like, it is such a high concentration of that stuff
right.
in one
right.
hour. Right. And to me, this represents like the two poles of which to judge Twin Peaks by in terms mm-hmm. of like feminist ratings. Mm-hmm. Like the one poll is like, you know, Twin Peaks and Fire Walk With Me are like empathetic works about, you know, the violence done against women. And then there's the other poll that argues that Twin Peaks is like exploitative and uses those emotions as like sort of a shock value or like entertainment. And this episode definitely falls in that second category.
Yeah, I agree.
To a lot of critics, including myself.
It also is a bummer that how you mentioned, like, it definitely feels like an episode of Twin Peaks, right down to the name. I mean, Laura is the One is a reference to Margaret's Log Lady intro from the pilot of the original series. Her last line in that one is, "The one leading to many is Laura Palmer. Laura is the one." So, you know, she says it again here, and she said it way back then in the Log Lady intro for Bravo or whatever. So, like, yeah. The diehard
for which you were the only one that watched it, though.
Yeah, you're right. It finally paid off, and you know, it that part is good in that it dictates what we're supposed, what they want the second half of Twin Peaks: The Return to be about, which is like reassessing Laura and that whole situation. But within the confines of this episode, it's almost like this is what modern television gets you, is especially like modern prestige premium television, is like, we can portray the violence of Twin Peaks without worry of censorship or having to dial it back. And it's like, I'm kind of glad you had to dial it back, because when you actually just see it more nakedly like this, it really sucks. Like, and it feels uncomfortable, not in the ways that like Fire Walk With Me is uncomfortable, which is in like a heartbreaking, you know, like slow motion car crash kind of way. This is like, this could very well just not have been shown to me, you know? And I know that this type of thing happens behind closed doors all the time, and it's very sad, and it's important to portray real life in some ways. But like, I get it. Richard Horne is a very bad person and should go to either to jail for the rest of life or should be killed or something. I don't even know. The show just shoves it down our throat a little bit.
You go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ryan.
I was just going to say, like, it is also like a pace thing. Like, they make a conscious decision to put certain lighter bits in this episode, but because of the content of everything around it, it makes those bits fall flat, because all of those bits end up just being like women, am I right? And it's like super uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think the other thing that is tough about this episode for me is all of the women who experience violence in this episode are characters who we barely know, right? Like, I think part of what makes Fire Walk With Me in particular so powerful is that it's a movie centered in Laura's experience. It is an empathetic film. And I don't know Amanda Seyfried's character at all. I've seen her once before. I barely know Sylvia Horne. I start the episode with Richard Horne and have seen more of him than anybody else. And it's sort of like centering things on him and like, look how evil this guy is, as opposed to being centered in an empathetic perspective. I don't know. It's just like, what am I supposed to get from this? I don't know these characters. And so, like you were saying, Ryan, it just feels like we're sort of acting out a form of violence for the sake of shock value, or just the like, man, it really sucks that he said the C word to this person. And it's like, yeah, I agree. That sucks. Also, who is she, by the way? What does she feel about that? I want to know more about her. So that was my issue with this, is I just like, I didn't really feel grounded in like any character's perspective particularly, which made it a weird piece of storytelling for me.
If I can interject with one small bit of trivia, and this is something we'll return to. So there's a scene with Johnny Horne and Sylvia, right?
Yeah.
It was originally going to be Audrey, and Sherilyn Finn refused to do it.
Uh-huh.
Woof.
Which I feel like says a lot about the production of this show. And good on her for not doing this shit. But yeah, I mean, we'll get to Audrey soon enough.
Jan.
So that was supposed to be like our first return to Audrey Horne as a character?
I don't know if first, because her entire storyline got reworked, but
I see.
It was supposed to be her in that scene.
Yikes.
Jan D'Arcy does a lot of work in that scene, but unfortunately the work is to make it feel more real. And it's like, oh, great. Thank you. You're really good at making me sad. My last thing, I think I had a final point. Just, yeah, that I really want to talk about that Johnny Horne scene, because it's been in my mind since the very first time I watched it. It never went away, and we'll get to it. But yeah, as we mentioned, one of the hardest things about this episode is, instead of following the victim, we follow the actors of this violence. In the beginning, we learn that the guy who ran over the kid's name is Richard. We later learn that this is Richard Horne, Sylvia's grandson. He comes up on Miriam's trailer. I don't want to belabor this in the traditional summary way, but he realizes, because she threw her the door of her trailer, admits to seeing him run over the child, and she wrote a letter to the police saying everything, and she wants him to get in trouble, and she's afraid of him. He seems pretty calm at first, but then he proceeds to break open her door and assault her and murder her. It's pretty fucked up. A lot of it is heard from outside of the trailer, which I was hoping was going to be the extent of it. And then they decided to put us inside the trailer and show us her dead body for a second, which was not awesome.
She's not dead.
Okay. That's something.
She is breathing in that scene.
Oh, she is totally breathing in that scene. I forgot. I thought she was like, I thought the breath was falling out of her at that. Like, she was in the process of dying.
We'll get back to this. This comes up.
So. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so Richard realizes that letter needs to be intercepted. He calls up everybody's favorite fuckboy, Chad, who plans to intercept the letter in this very like shitty way. It's like, I guess I can help you, Richard. Whatever. Like, you're gonna owe me for this. This is an episode about bad criminals being bad at being criminals. Also, in some ways that are funny, in some ways that are awful. But we'll keep going.
Yeah.
So then we get, like you said, Ryan, violence followed by a respite, followed by more violence. Carl Rodd is just banging out the tunes on his guitar. He's playing a song that we identified as Red River Valley by Marty Robbins. And you're like, oh, this is so good. For 30 seconds, you're like, this is so good. And then you just hear people, something get thrown through a window. And yep, it's Shelley's daughter's fucking boyfriend assaulting her because she's telling him that something about not making enough money. We didn't even need to see this, except to confirm that like their relationship is not good.
Not good. Do you have the line from Billy Dean Stanton here?
John? No, I didn't pull it.
I think he just said fucking nightmare or something like that.
Yeah. And like, what is he going to do? Right? Like, he's run this trailer park for years and probably heard stuff like this countless times. And it's like, what am I going to call the police? Like, unfortunately, you hear something like that, you don't have power in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, he has a certain amount of power that he's choosing not to use, right?
In terms of being the owner of the trailer park, you mean?
Yeah. Or, I mean, not to say that calling the police is like a great option in a lot of cases, but that is a thing you could do. True. Or, I don't know. But he's just sort of numb to it, in a really upsetting way.
It's literally decades he's been dealing with this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's yet another incident. And back to, let's pivot back to a wacky scene. One of the best Mitchum Brothers scenes. We learned that one of the
women... so funny. Oh, my God.
You can't help but laugh. I mean, so we learned that one of the women in Pink's name is Candy. She's in the Mitchum Brothers house with them, and she sees a fly in the room, and one of them's like stressing about the television and what's on the local news or whatever. And meanwhile, you know that she's trying to hit this fly. The first thing she goes for is this remote, and it's the best kind of comedy when you know how it's going to end, right? You're just like, that guy's gonna get hit with a TV remote, and then she bops him very hard in the fucking forehead with a TV remote. And I wrote in my notes, if I was a YouTube critic, I would write something about TV is evil, TV causes violence, or something.
Twin Peaks explained.
Exactly. The real meaning of Twin Peaks, the return. We see that the
everything
remote...
went downhill when we had too many channels.
She hit him with the channel. She channels him.
I love this when this scene cuts, because it just goes on for a long time and then it just cuts randomly. It's very good.
Yeah, it cuts and then we come back to it, right?
We come back to it like at nighttime, but
yeah.
And then if another production note, the actor for Rodney Mitchum, I think like he got injured on set, like a lighting fixture fell on him or something, and they had to find a way to justify there being a scar on his face, and this was it.
Oh my goodness, that is fantastic. I mean, sorry that guy got hurt, but they really made something out of that.
That makes the YouTube critic joke way funnier, is like, they deliberately made him get hit with the remote, and it's like, nah, I bonked my head, and they wanted continuity, so they made me get my head bonked.
If you notice in the shot, they don't show the left side of his face at all.
Yeah.
So, yes.
This whole plot is just proof that, like, they didn't need to expand the episode order for the return. They didn't have to.
Oh, yeah. No. Exactly.
There's so much filler. Like, we spend so... It's wild to me that that's the case, because significant, like several minutes, almost double digit minutes of this episode is spent with the ramifications of Candy hitting him in the face with a remote. And so it's like, okay.
I needed it, though. Maybe you didn't need 18 episodes. I personally needed it just for levity, honestly.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. But like, if they had time to riff a whole plot on one of the Mitchum brothers having a face injury, I don't know how essential that is.
I feel you.
It also just speaks to like Candy being a character that like you don't ever expect to like be a thing,
right?
But is just, she's Candy.
Yeah.
Every time now that her and the other girls are in the background of a scene, I'm like paying attention to the scene's action with my left eye, and my right eye is going, "What's your deal? Why are you here? What is your situation?"
Why are you like this?
When we're in the like casino back room and like all the like lying and crap is happening, I'm like, "What are they on drugs? Like, why are they acting like that? What's going on? I need that."
Yeah, must be drugs or something, right?
Yeah. That's my
Amy Shields, who plays Candy. I think after this show came out, it was very much like, I don't know, David Lynch wanted me to do some stuff, I guess. It was fun.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
She has fun with what she's given here, for sure. This is actually intercut with a visit to Dr. Ben. Dougie and Janie visit Dr. Ben, who does a checkup on Dougie. And Janie E. also does a checkup on her husband. Sexy, sexy body. She is.
I don't know how
herself.
She didn't notice this until now.
Yeah,
I know,
just
right?
He took his
shirt off,
now she's
Dougie
like,
has
oh.
not been dressing himself. Anyway,
it's
that's funny.
Kind of goes to show like how sometimes how little couples like notice each other physically after being married for so long.
And maybe so, she needed a validation from an outside source.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when the doctor is like, wow, you're so healthy. And she's like, yeah, he is. She starts like a car engine. You can tell.
The other thing that's funny about this to me is like, that's Kyle MacLachlan's real life body.
That's just his how he looks. Kyle's hot.
And so it's like David Lynch and Mark Frost are like, okay, so Kyle's cut, right? We can make something out of that.
I'm sure he had to do some stuff.
No, I'm sure he had to do a little exercise. But I don't know. It's just funny that it works in the script that he's a fit, handsome guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's usually like on soap operas and sitcoms and stuff.
Right. True. True.
We don't think about Kyle MacLachlan's body that much until this point. But we cut back to the Mitchums. Only I mention this because they're watching the local news and they actually see Ike the Spike's arrest. We get to see.
I forgot this payoff. I love it.
It's so funny. The part that made me laugh the hardest was one of them just idly says to the other, remind me to call off that hit on Ike. Like, wait. You're like, wait, what? No, wait. They all know each. Everyone knows each other here. And this is made funnier because Candy continues to cry the entire time for this whole scene. And they're like, Candy, it's fine. No one's mad at you. Rodney's not even mad at you. And you hit him with the remote. And she's like, you'll never love me again. But yeah, it was fun to see the news report like actually on TV.
It made it make a lot more sense that it was shot like a news report episodes ago. Because it's like, okay, I see. You just didn't want to shoot this too separate ways, I guess.
Yeah,
but like, I don't know. It's still or
maybe
felt strange
maybe in the script it came up later, but Lynch decided to put them side by side and then show it later.
Yeah, that makes right. sense.
Yeah. There was a line in here that I was questioning. One of them says to the other, "Turns out Mr. Jones is actually Mr. Jones." Are they referring to like the Mr. Jones that they know from the casino is the Mr. Jones on TV?
I think they're referring to, like, Cooper didn't give him, like, a fake name.
Oh, it's like, oh, yes, yeah, this is his real name. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the only other thing I wrote was that Candy crying a lot reminds me of Bill Hastings crying a lot, and we now have, like, a recurring motif of people who don't know how to stop crying.
Yeah, she's not on the Bill Hastings level, but it's pretty good crying.
Yeah, and she also isn't. She's not like saying that much. She like delivers a whole fucking monologue while bawling his eyes out, which is a different skill. And then we get the funniest scene in the episode, like by a long shot. This is one of the, if we're making the machete cut, the part that I would keep because I laughed, and also the production note on this one is very funny. We cut back to the Jones household, and Janie's horny. She asks Dougie if he thinks she's beautiful, and exactly like I do when a woman asks me if I think that they're beautiful, just fucking filling his mouth with chocolate cake, devouring a lot of chocolate cake. I was like wheezing laughing. I felt like this was a shit post or something. Like,
so funny. And she's so just good. Unfazed by the whole thing. It's like, this is a totally normal way that we, you know, do foreplay with each other is I watch you eat chocolate cake.
I just love the, do you find me attractive, Dougie? And then he takes another fucking bite of the cake.
And she's like, I find you very attractive when you're eating that cake.
They take it up to the bedroom, and Naomi Watts gets to have really weird sex with a stationary guy, MacLachlan. Per the production notes, during the filming of Cooper and Janie E's sex scene, Kyle MacLachlan was only given the direction to lie down on the bed and be more or less passive. As it was being shot, though, his arms began naturally bouncing with the motions of the bed, prompting the director of photography to lean in and whisper, "Keep doing the arms. It's hilarious."
It was pretty funny.
I fucking died, man. Like, he just is flopping. She's doing all the work, and he's like, at first, completely passive, and then when it, you know, comes to a conclusion, he smiles like he just saw God, and it's like, oh, this is beautiful. But what the hilarious tragedy of it is Sonny Jim hears the whole thing.
Oh, gosh. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Boy's traumatized.
That was uncomfy.
Ooh.
This it rivals that first piss, huh? Dougie Cooper is like, oh man, there's something better than the first ever piss of my life
in 25 years or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
had the thought of like, what if this is what finally wakes Cooper up?
Right. He finishes and he's like,
he's back, guys. He's back.
It only took a little over half the season. Yeah. God, yeah. It's so freaking hilarious and really like brought me back to a good place.
And then I just got really bummed out thinking about like, what happens when Cooper does come back to his senses and he has to be like, hey, I'm not Dougie.
Ah, we've made it to the mid-season fan theory.
Yeah. It's like, how does that conversation go? I don't know.
Badly. I don't remember specifically that conversation, but I know that it's had. So it's going to be interesting. And so Sonny Jim hears it, and they're having a great time.
Dougie!
Fucking laugh. Again, Twin Peaks motifs. Donna, why? Dougie! People are yelling names. This is it.
I think literally during that Comic-Con panel, you know, Kyle does the Mr. Jackpots and that at a fucking, what's her name? Naomi Watts does the Dougie!
Oh, fuck yeah. That's funny. Wow.
That's pretty fun. It was really a missed opportunity to not have Dougie go hello in that scene, but I guess that would have been too corny.
You can make a really easy edit that's just him at the end going Mr. Jackpots or something. Yeah, or hello. Yeah.
And this is like auto-tune. That's nice.
Thank you. Yeah, I did a little I'm actually auto-tuned. Dr. Amp is back. And I wrote in my quotes, no, I want the last scene back. Give me my sex back. I don't want Dr. Amp.
It's a perfect encapsulation of libertarian ideology and how like fucking stupid it is. Yes. That he like almost has this point about like, who cares who we marry? We can marry whoever we want. Yeah. And then he goes into...
Oh, they wouldn't come anyway. They're too busy fucking...
That's the government he's talking
fucking
about.
Fucking us at the grocery store, at the bank, at the gas pump. They're feeding our children chemical shit, coated in...
And it's like, what? What are you saying?
Stop.
The government's too busy fucking? Huh?
He makes good points. That's why this is so
frustrating. I was like... Yeah,
wait,
okay.
He makes good points? What?
I mean, like, the government giving your kids terrible food, like, you know, to keep your kids unhealthy. But it's not, like, not the stuff about, like, the government. So like, it's just, like, it's exactly what you're saying, though. It's the libertarian thing. Well, like, wait,
Yeah, it's the fucking, like, we agree on some level that there is a fundamental wrong in society.
Yeah.
But where we go from there,
different dimensions.
Right. Yeah.
And once again, Nagin is devouring it. We learned two interesting little like development details for her. One is that she's gone from enjoying milkshakes, which she did in the original series, to now she's a protein shakes kind of girl, which is good for her. And we pan
let's
out.
Let's fucking go.
Nadine opened a business. It's called Run Silent, Run Drapes. She did it.
I love it.
The dream is made reality here. I'm so proud of her.
This really balances out the fact that she looks at Jacoby and she says,
he's so beautiful.
And that's like her first line of the season. That sucked, but she has her business. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah. She's got Run Silent, Run Drapes. I don't know how I feel about that being it's a whole store. A silent drape runner store is hilarious.
It's great. It's great.
I'm happy, but I'm just like, how successful can that be? I hope it's great for her. It looks like it's successful. Who knows? And then, but
those drapes were so silent that I jumped into the middle of the episode just to grab clips, and it was playing the part with the silent drape runners, and I thought that my volume wasn't on, but they're that silent.
I turned it up and up, and I couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
Oh, also, most notably, there is a shovel in the store window.
Right.
Yep. So it's like Chekhov's shovel, pretty much. And then the last thing I was going to say about Jacoby stuff here is, like so many people of this style, he can tell people what's bad and tell people like, this is awful and this is awful, but what should you do listening at home? Well, you can buy my product for just $59, buy my gold. Like, it's like, oh, come on, your action is the part that fucking sucks. You were so close to being a just having an ideology, even. It's like you're just a charlatan, as you were in the original series. But yeah, I thought it was nice to see Nadine doing well, at least. Brief cut back to Jerry Horn, just to remind you that he's alive still. He yells out whatever spirit is still in his leg. He says, "You can't hurt me. I've been here before." I don't even know. I don't even know what's going on with Jerry Horn or if it goes anywhere. Ryan, do you remember if Jerry Horn stuff goes anywhere?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, that's great. I'm happy for him. And then we go back to the Twin Peaks Sheriff's Department, where Chet is another bumbling criminal who doesn't know how to be a criminal, and he shittily attempts to sweet talk Lucy.
Did you say Chet?
Chad. It's definitely Chad. I think my subtitles might have been wrong. I remember debating this, but it's Chad. Attempts to sweet talk Lucy. This, did you catch more product placement, by the way? Lucy and her not one, not two, but three big ass Dell monitors. Dell logo is prominent.
I mean,
it's never that bad, but that's how product placement works. Like when you edit an episode, you do acknowledge that, like, yes, the brand is showing on these things.
I mean, I walk into an office and I just assume everybody's gonna have a Dell, right?
Yeah, that's Dell's ubiquitous to me. It's the office man's monitor. Cha-ching. it's not the worst. It's not like I'm gonna eat a whole hearty box of Weedos or something. It's like just there, but I noticed it. So he tries to talk to her. I don't think this is where the stuff happens, though. I think we cut away from it first.
The stuff?
I don't think so.
Is this where he, like, he tries to take the mail? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So he, as instructed by Richard Horn, was told to get the mail and intercept it. Goes outside. Lucy's like, they bring the mail inside. Why are you bringing it? He's like, I'm just going to save him the walk. And she's not stupid. She watches him outside. She watches him slide the envelope right into his shirt pocket or shirt.
Chad loses every game of Among Us.
I know.
Immediately.
Even the male person is like, what are you doing?
Why are you doing that? I'll take that. I'll take your mail, sir. Thank you. Just going to pocket this one for later. Like, what, dude? No chill, no subtlety whatsoever.
Time to get me another donut.
Mm. Yeah, right. Like he won. It's like, literally. Well, you see, they put those donuts in the corner, and so my hungry ass is watching them like, I wish I could eat a donut. And then he decides to be the person who does it.
My fan theory is that everybody at the sheriff's department knows that Chad is a crooked cop, and they keep him around because it, you know, gives them closer access to people.
That's a
doing
good fan theory. I
unseemly
think that
things
is basically true. I don't know. I don't remember, actually.
We'll see. We'll find out.
We have to talk about it now. It's another one of the worst scenes in the episode.
Well, before this, I just want to say, you know, Chad looks outside and says, it's a great day. And I'm like, yeah, it is a great day here in Twin Peaks, and we're wasting it on this fucking bullshit.
Yeah, I would love to be outside doing any other plot, for example. Like when Bobby broke the thing against the floor, I was like, this is a great time to go outside. I agree. But yeah, I'm like, you're going to steal mail? Like, cool. Good luck, Bal.
And we're going to get this great scene.
Johnny Horn is sitting at his kitchen table with a bear that has a light bulb replacing its head.
He's not just sitting there. He's restrained at his kitchen table.
He's wearing padding, a helmet, and a full body suit and pads. And he's tied to the chair. Before we even talk about Richard Horn coming in, what's going on with Johnny Horn?
He has extreme autism.
There it is. The show doesn't need to say it. It's implied that, like, he, you know, we've seen him even in the first two seasons, like, obviously showing signs of autism, but also, like, harming himself by hitting himself and stuff. So it's like, okay.
But also, Mark Frost's words, not mine.
Right. To be clear.
Please don't pin that on me.
No, right. Yes. And so that's what they do. And I guess the idea is, one, the bear is a David Lynch-y thing of, like, it's repeating itself. Isn't that weird?
I think this might actually, like, literally be from a David Lynch thing.
Oh, is it? Well, yeah. It's like, hello, Johnny, from how like are you today? Over and over again in a British voice. If you're trying to understand it, it's like, it's keeping him stimulated by giving him something repetitive to look at. I don't know. It's interrupted by everybody's least favorite human, Richard Horn, who breaks the door open and threatens Sylvia, and makes her give him all of her money from her purse and from the safe. And he beats her and calls her every swear word in the book, every awful thing you can
say. Every single one, yeah.
He just crosses off the seven deadly sins, assaults his grandmother and her disabled son. And that's all, I think. Do we ever even see Sylvia or Johnny again?
We hear Sylvia on the phone talking to Ben later in a really shitty scene.
Right. That's sort of like repeating cycle of shittiness where, because she was hurt, she is now being like kind of harsh with Ben, being like, you need to give me money. Why the fuck aren't you going to give me this money? Our grandson, my grandson, just like robbed me. And it's awful. It fucking sucks, dude. I don't know. I don't want to belabor this one. I don't know. We're just trying to show that Richard Horne is going to leave town.
I don't know. I do.
You what?
In terms of criticizing it, I mean.
Oh, you want to belabor it? Yeah.
Let's belabor it.
Yeah, belabor it.
Okay. Nothing actually. I remember the scene being way more violent than it actually is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because all it is Jerry Horn comes in, shouts at her grandma, and knocks her down on the floor and tells her to stay there, and then he gets the money and then he leaves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everything else is all the background noise and cinematography.
Yeah.
And even that is like, okay, great. I know what A Clockwork Orange is. Thank you, David Lynch.
Thanks. Like, why Johnny? Like, what does Johnny add to this scene? It's just like he feels hopeless, right. I guess, because he knows that she's being hurt and like would help her, I guess.
It's so they can do the fucking Hello Johnny line over and over again.
And end the scene on it. It's like, oh my god, it's looping even though the whole thing happened.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. And like, ultimately, this is what this scene says about Richard Horne. It says, hey, you saw this guy run over a kid and show no remorse. And did you know he also doesn't even love his grandmother?
What an awful dude.
And it's like, huh? What?
No.
Oh, I... Sorry. I did forget the part where she chokes her and, you know, doesn't give her breasts so she can say where the money is.
Right.
Sucks.
What's this code to the safe while my hands sucks, are on your throat? Dude. Oh, boy. Guys, not the play. Once again, this is... Laura's not the one here. It's just, so bad. And also, we remarked on this last, I think, previously, but they didn't even get the same actor for Johnny. Like, I don't know if they weren't able to, but, like, for a season that prides itself so much on, like, look at these people who were able to age and, like, be older and see them as older people. And it's like, no, Johnny Horn's been played by three different people distinctly. And has been a background character since the beginning and always was.
Again, like, the question of, like, empathy. Like, that is just not here for, like, Johnny in the same way that it is, like, Laura.
Right.
For a character that's been in the show in, let me count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 episodes across the entire franchise, we still never learn anything about Johnny. Like, not truly. Not really.
Well, you don't want to learn more about Johnny because Mark Frost...
The stuff in the books is bad, yeah.
Tells you what's up with Johnny, and it sucks.
What's in the books, or do we learn that in the?
That's where the extreme autism line comes from.
Right? Oh, cool! Very cool. Yeah. Cool. Okay,
yeah.
No, it's not like Johnny has magical powers, which is its own awful trope. But it's a different. Yeah. It's just like he's. Right. Yeah. Boy, but we got past it.
Can we talk about Mr. Lenovo ThinkPad?
Mr. Lenovo ThinkPad himself,
and the way he says the word "okay." You want to hear this?
I do.
Okay. Okay. Me watching this episode.
Okay. Me after someone gives me a whole speech about something and I have only processed 10% of it. He gets to be the powerful person here instead of getting yelled at. He calls in Anthony Sinclair, Tony, from Lucky 7 Insurance.
Hey.
I love his power here is not only to tell Anthony what to do, but to be like, Anthony, don't sit down. Anthony, don't sit down.
It's awesome.
I want an office with a chair just so I can tell people not to sit.
Ooh. One of the things I really enjoyed about, besides the like Janie E. Dougie Jones comedy scenes, which I think were my favorite part. I think my second favorite part is the way that this episode stitches together all of these like Las Vegas schmucks, and to see Duncan Todd berate Anthony Sinclair and be like, you need to go trick the stupid Mitchum brothers or you're going to have to kill Dougie. This scene was so fun. And then seeing Anthony Sinclair go talk to the Mitchum brothers was fun. Yeah. I just like that they're closing these loops and making all these dumb guys talk to each other.
Right. It's bad criminals talking to bad criminals again.
Yeah.
My favorite line from here is just the, like, when you need exposition, but you don't know how to make it organic, and you have Duncan Todd say, do you recall my business rivals and bitter enemies, the Mitchum brothers?
That was so funny.
All right, we need to explain right this second why the next scene is going to happen. We need all of it right now. Okay, to your
call. He's fucking, Duncan really Todd might as well be fucking Jesse Eisenberg and
right.
Social Network or whatever. Right.
That's pretty funny.
People who I hate, you all know. Everyone knows I hate them. They're the Mitchum brothers. And yes, he tells Anthony to convince the Mitchums that Dougie swindled them so that they kill him, and instead of tying it back to Duncan Todd. Another blessed moment. Constance and Albert are out on a dinner date.
Oh, such great fan service that we never could have hoped for.
Thank
but
you,
here it
David
is.
David Lynch and Mark Frost. For once, he made me not mad. Thank you so much. They're out on a dinner date. They're having a great time. And Tammy and Gordon are eavesdropping on the whole thing. Just like it's giggling adorable. In the back. And I wrote here, the way that this episode waffles back and forth between happy fun and deep discomfort is very transfixing. And also, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, definitely.
Then we have, I think this is just the, yeah, oh yeah, this is the stuff in the back of the casino. Candy, like the other girls, just like barely there. She's zonked out, which I wrote was me working retail for some reason. I just write jokes in my fucking notes. I don't know. And the Mitchums quickly realize that she's not doing her job because they send her down to tell Anthony Sinclair to come up, and you get to really watch them understand this in real time and go like, yeah, just Candy, please go down there. Candy, can you go down there? Okay, thanks, Candy. She goes down there, talks to him. Okay, she's talking to him. Any second now, he's going to come right up.
It's so good.
Beat. Another beat.
The thing that makes this nice is like the Mitchum brothers don't do anything terrible to Candy, and they even have this moment where one of them's like, look, if we fire her, she has no place to go.
Yeah.
I loved that. I was like, that's an interesting. Like, what?
Like, I'm upset seeing Candy so zonked out and clearly like super high, and this is a really fucking weird situation. But at least they're like somehow taking some care of her. I don't know. Maybe I'm just starved for that in this particular episode. But that made me feel more comfortable laughing at it.
Yeah. What I love in this scene is that the Mitchum brothers watch a David Lynch movie happen in front of them.
Yeah.
And wait several beats for something to happen.
Yeah.
And fucking Steve Buscemi just goes, what the fuck? It's so funny.
The physical comedy on the like monitors as we're watching Candy talk to Anthony Sinclair, and then she starts gesturing very widely at the casino, and you're like, I don't know what she could be saying, but it's clearly irrelevant to the situation.
Yeah.
God, that was funny. That was
and then
really
the physical
well,
comedy of them yelling into the headset, and then the guy just throws it out off of his ear.
Yeah.
It's good.
Pretty funny.
At this point, I was like, thank you. We're past the bad parts of this episode. I just want to have a little bit of fun before the episode's over. Thank you so much. And then they come up with Candy brings up Anthony Sinclair. More just like awkwardness. And you realize that like Sinclair doesn't know how to deliver the secret, and the Mitchum brothers don't know how to respond to it. Nobody knows what's going on.
At all.
It's like,
you have an enemy in Dougie Jones.
Yeah, like... It's like,
an enemy, I tell you.
I didn't underline it enough. I need to tell them one more thing.
he's like trying to cast a spell, and he's like, why isn't this working?
He's like, do they believe me? I'm not sure if they believe me.
They also totally believe him, which makes it even funnier.
blind being the blind, honestly. It's like, yeah, he could have just been like, so Dougie's bad. They're like, what, really? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, done. We'll kill him then.
Yeah.
Perfectly handled across the board. And yeah, now they're going to go after Dougie Jones. I'm sure that's going to go super well for them in the coming episodes. Yeah. So then I believe we get Gordon Cole in his hotel room. There's some awesome jazz in the background. And he's drawing, Majan, I think you wrote, like, some shit that David Lynch would draw.
Yeah,
totally.
It's like a spotted deer with a hand coming from off the paper to grab it.
Yeah.
His scratchy
I dreamed of a deer made of pure ooze.
A hand from nowhere grabbed it out of the ether. His pen sounds like the arm, by the way. It has like big army noises. I don't think that's anything. I think it's just sound design, like the scratching.
Listen to the sounds. No, you did it. Listen to the sounds.
I successfully listened. And then things get a little weird. A knock on his door, and he opens it, and he sees a like really zoomed-in shot of Laura Palmer crying and Sarah screaming for her. And he's like, huh, that's really weird, and like kind of shakes it off, and it's Albert just standing there. So Laura's the one, guys. Laura's relevant. That's just the show doing
it. Did you guys know that Twin Peaks is a show about violence being done to women?
We showed it to you, and now we're showing you past versions of
themes.
It. Themes. Me when themes.
Motifs. Wow.
Much love. Sorry.
Guys, I think this, as joked on Totally Reprise, I think this small town has a few dark secrets.
Dark secrets. Who could say?
That's funny.
Albert's chilling there. Is this when they discuss it, or do we, the viewers, see? Oh, no, they mention that Diane was exchanging messages with someone.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and a deeply encrypted message.
And then Gordon says, yeah, the deeply encrypted message was like, hey, they're on to you.
So they have Hastings.
They have Hastings. So Diane's working with Bad Cooper or something.
Or something.
Gordon says, I felt it when she hugged me, but this confirms it. Something's going on there.
I remember where this plot goes for once.
Bad Cooper was involved in setting up the box in New York, according to the picture that Tammy has.
I fucking popped off.
Yeah.
Just because the implication that evil Cooper is like this billionaire dude who set up this dumb room.
A billionaire who still chooses to wear leather jackets and never cut his hair. Like,
it just, when you look at that shot, it just feels like he doesn't belong there.
Like he was photoshopped into something.
Like these two things, the glass box room and evil Cooper, do not belong in the same dimension.
Agreed.
Well, also, because we haven't seen the glass box since the first episode, and it's like, oh, the glass box. Oh, fuck yeah, with the girl and the guy. Yeah, that glass box still matters.
Did we ever talk about the scene where evil Cooper's in front of a mansion chilling?
Oh yeah, but there's like the one surviving photo of him or whatever.
Yeah, when they're like on the plane and they show like a Cooper in like a
white
suit, like suit with like a Hawaiian shirt on, and he's just chilling by a pool. Yeah.
He like watched Scarface at some point, and he's like, "That's what I want to do.
That's me. I want to be like that." He was
There's like the evil Cooper that like. Oh, but how do they get these photos? By the way, like who took that photo?
Took that
anyway.
It was like maybe it was an FBI agent from far away or something.
I think the implication for this New York photo is they had like all the tapes of the whole place, why would they have already set up the recording? I don't know.
And then why didn't they get Cooper, actual Dale Cooper?
Right, why didn't they see Cooper? Yeah.
Anyway, the evil Cooper that are in these images and the evil Cooper that is in the show feel completely two different things.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the evil Cooper in the photos is like this jet-setting billionaire philanthropist, whatever, evil guy, and the one that we see is like Randall Flagg.
Can you imagine, like, the evil Cooper just like talks to this like scientist guy, and he's just like, "Yeah, so this is gonna capture entities from another dimension, right?"
I think a glass box, and we should film it. Film the whole thing. Yeah, it's really weird.
I've stocked up on micro SD cards.
There was a sale on Newegg. Also, when Tammy...
It was Cyber Monday last week.
They bought their whole stock. Tammy, when she goes around the corner to knock on the door and tell them some stuff, is in, like, slow motion, as if, like, someone was about to get shot. It was really weird. They're like, oh, Tammy's here. I just thought that was kind of a weird little bit of film stuff.
Oh, I mean, that was because of the hearing aid.
Oh, right, because then she knocks and it affects him too much because the thing's loud. Sylvia calls Ben, reminding me that they're married. I guess, actually, no, are they still married? I don't...
Seems like they're separated. Divorced.
Yeah. Because she mentions a lawyer.
Yes, yes. And she's comfortable being like, Ben, you have to give me money. Richard robbed me blind, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And the button, Richard Beimer, has to be funny. Just exasperated as hell, calls up Beverly. Beverly, would you like to come to dinner with me?
I don't think that's meant to be funny. I think that's meant to be like, ah, fuck, Ben. Yeah. You're trying to be a good guy and you blew it.
They pull you right back in. They always got to do it to you once again.
Yeah.
So is he going to now turn to Beverly and do something with her? Who could say? I don't remember.
Well, is Beverly even there? Is he just like wishing the situation to exist?
I don't know.
That's kind of my read on it.
I like that read better.
Yeah. Like, not, she's not across the room listening to this phone call. She's just not there. And he's like into the atmosphere, like, Beverly, come to dinner, please.
I mean, I'm sure we'll see the resolution of it somehow.
Yes, yes. Most definitely. I'm more meant that was funny just because, yeah, Richard Beimer, like, exasperated is funny to me, but it's definitely, like, not played as comedy.
Yeah.
And then the log lady speaks to Hawk over the phone. Some of the stuff she says here is awesome. Electricity is humming. Really cool thing to say. We already know what that means, though. We know electricity is where things come out from the lodge. And then she decides to be really corny. The Truman Brothers are true men.
Are they? Not two episodes ago, you told me that the atom bomb was the source of all evil.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Harry Truman.
They're true men. I think that's just somebody had fun on the script and was like, it would be cool to get her to say this.
Okay, but there's two people writing the script, and they both said the atom bomb.
They both agreed the atom bomb. Yeah.
Right.
Well, maybe a true man isn't a good thing. It's definitely worded. Like, the way she says it is like, that's a nice thing to say. Like, they're true guys. But maybe it means like,
well, then she's like, men. They're your brothers. Like, they're, yeah. You guys are all cool with each other.
Right.
Anyway. Now the circle's complete. Dream of time and space. Da 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 da.
It is just, you can't, you called your character a Harry Truman.
right.
It's like, okay.
That chicken has to come to roost at a certain point.
Yeah. Continuing the theme of this episode being in some ways about returning and going back to what we know from the original series.
Where it all began.
I'm missing a reference here.
The song.
That's the song.
That's the song that she's singing. You're just singing episode. It beautifully. Yeah, it's like, yeah. It's just really good.
Thanks.
Right. The song is No Stars by Rebecca Del Rio, who worked with David Lynch, I guess, to write this song.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And she was in a really cool scene in Mulholland Drive, also singing some of the songs.
I like this song.
I like that she's dressed up to be in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, with the Black Lodge or the Red Room floor on her dress.
Yeah, you said she's wearing the Red Room, which I thought was awesome. It's a good outfit. I would wear it. And yeah, half the song is also in Spanish, which is pretty fun. But yeah, it was a long one. It was like a full song performance. It wasn't just like a minute of it.
Yeah.
That's like 3 minutes or something.
I think the thing with me in this song, I just don't like the production on her voice.
It's a little too crisp.
It rubs my ears the wrong way. It doesn't.
Yeah,
she already has like a really amazing voice. I just don't like what they did to it.
That's fair.
I just want to watch Mulholland Drive again because I want to watch Lenovo ThinkPad guy pass out. That's all I will say. That's the episode. That's part 10, folks. Bit of a disappointing one for a lot of it, but had some parts that were entertaining at the same time, and we're building to
But hey, think of it this way. the rest of the season blends together in my head. So, you know, I'm not going to say it's a perfect show from here on out.
No.
But, you know, it's going to, you know, less downer episodes, I think.
There are at least three more hilarious scenes and then like eight more incredible scenes that I can remember still to come. So we're not out of the woods just yet, folks. Even next week, we're going to have a wacky scene. But yeah, next week we'll be watching episode 11. Let me find the title of it real quick. Doesn't John do happen to have
there's
it?
There's fire where you are going.
Oh, who could possibly... That's Hawk?
I'm going to say there's fire where you are going. I'm going to say that's Mike.
Oh, sure. I mean, it could be like a lodge thing. It could be also the log lady. Again, she's not done yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's warning somebody about something. There's fire where you are going next week. But for this week, it's time to talk some plots.
You know what? Yeah, you know what? I'm just going to say confidently, it is like uphill from here on out.
Okay, there we go.
I can say that with confidence. I'm like skimming through the episodes.
Yeah, I was just doing that.
We're still going to have Richard Horne, but like, yeah. I think the rest of the season is fairly consistent. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Still has some incredible moments to come.
That's my weather prediction for the rest of the show.
Rain's coming. Ryan, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at bluestrose430.
Excellent. And as for John and I, we have a little spiel. John, can you do the spiel this week, please?
I sure can. You can get in touch with the show in a few different ways. You can email us, chatspot@gmail.com, with your questions, your comments, your thoughts, your audio recordings of yourself, your deepest, darkest secrets. Maybe not those, because we don't feel that we can hold those for you, but, you know, things that are relevant to our show. You can also follow us on Twitter at chatspot. You can join the subreddit, reddit.com/r/chatspot, where we watch old shows and listen to old seasons of Chats. And hey, if you want to help us out, you can rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever podcast app you use, whatever, however you get the podcast. There's probably a little star thing you can bop, you can do do do. You could recommend the show to somebody else. Hey, there are these you know, podcasters talking about TV. You got to give it a listen. And you could send us some money at patreon.com/chatspot. $1 a month gets you some random bonus episodes. $3 a month gets you some consistent bonus episodes thrice a month. $5 a month, that gets you shouted out every single week right here at the end of the episode. People like Kat, Marcus, Nick and Pat of the Brothers at Infinite War, Fendon, Six, Stefan, Jen, my mom, and Arthur are all $5 patrons, and we love them very much. We also love everybody very much, but they got their names read. And we have a website, chatspot.com. You can go there. We put some cute stuff on the website. You can also find all of our chatsums, by the way, linked on the website soon once that goes live. But you know, that'll be there in the near future in case you ever want to find an old chatsum. And then, hey, shout out to Camilla at Camillustrator for our podcast art. We really like it, and we're very happy that she made it for us. That's all the plugs. Let's talk about our chatsums, our little things we're going to snack on and experience between now and next time. Recommendations from us to you. Ryan, you're our guest. What's your chatsum?
Oh, fuck, dude. I don't know.
Oh, okay. You want me to go
to that? It's okay. Listen, no.
Yeah.
Here's the actual thing. It's bad out here, guys. The world is really bad.
Yes.
Things are bad.
Yes.
Multiple people close to me like have had COVID within the past month. So it's rough.
I'm sorry,
it's bad out here.
Yeah.
I've just been every day after work coming home and playing Kingdom Hearts how I'm coping. I don't know. I don't got anything. I don't have anything. I'm playing Kingdom Hearts still.
There you go.
That's a chance. And sometimes
it's fucking bad. Stay home.
Yeah. Jeez.
It's I don't mean to laugh. It's just sort of like laughing at the pain kind of thing. But I've actually also found myself returning to Kingdom Hearts. I don't know what it is. Partly because you've been tweeting about it, but also, you know, I still have my Vita, and between bouts of Danganronpa, I've been like trying out Birth by Sleep because I never played it, and I remember you talking a lot about it, Ryan, when you first played it.
It's the best Kingdom Hearts.
It's pretty fucking good. I have to say that. I'm sorry to curse, but it's quite good. I'm enjoying it a lot. I haven't been playing a lot of it, but whenever I dip into it, I'm like, wait, what? This just existed for like 13 years? This game's been out? Yeah. Kingdom Hearts, thank you. Stay safe.
Anyway, yeah. I'm in the Kingdom Hearts hole. The story is shit, mm-hmm. but it's so fun to play.
It is, and it is.
Yeah.
There you go.
I guess I can say I've been streaming at twitch.tv/bluestrose.
Oh, there you go.
I've been streaming some Kingdom Hearts. I'm nice. Doing like some of the challenge bosses.
Critical mode and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I've streamed like every day this week except for today. Mm-hmm. So
check out Ryan's Twitch.
I'll keep doing that probably.
Nice. Alan, what about you? What's your chatsum?
I feel like the really easy chatsum would just be to say Wordle and move on, but everybody and their mom is literally playing it, so I'd like...
Okay, what is it?
All right, I got you, Ryan.
I don't know what this is.
So it's a website. It's Wordle. I just Googled Wordle, and it comes up if you play it in your browser, either on your phone or your desktop. And it's every day there's a five-letter word that you're trying to guess, and you have six guesses at it. And every time you put in a five-letter guess, the game tells you each letter, whether it's in the word, whether you have it in the correct place, or whether it's, you know, so gray means it's not in the word at all. Yellow means it's in the word, but you have it in the wrong position. And green means right place, right position. And you build on your guesses to eventually, within six guesses, guess the word of the day. And it's a different word every day, and they're all five-letter words. So it's pretty simple. But it can like consume you for like the 15 minutes or whatever that it takes to solve it, because it's just hard enough that you're like, I don't know if I'm even going to get it today. And then you always get it and you're like, I'm the smartest person in the world. I got it in three guesses. It's also really easy to share because they give you a button that's like, send a fucking image of your board at the end. That's what people are sharing when they tweet about it with the little green squares and stuff.
Yes, and that's what I'm muting.
Yes, you're probably better off because I don't know why. I share it with like Magellan and our other friend because we like to talk about the Wordle, but I don't know why you would like tweet about it. Like,
I just don't need the green squares on my timeline. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I just don't even know what it meant for like months.
It's like 2008 all months, over again.
I'm just like, what did... I'm going to mute this. That's not what I come to Twitter for. I'm sorry.
It's a harmless enough game. It's just that, yeah. And also the marketing companies are getting into it now. So I saw like a fucking reference to it. I think it was Square. You saw
Pringles playing it on Twitter or something?
Pringles was playing. No, I think it was Square. Like the payment processing company was like.
Square.
Yeah. Not Square Enix. But yeah, Square. That would have been wild.
Oh my God. What if it, instead of NFTs, Square Enix got really into Wordle?
I'd find anything but NFTs, please.
The word of the day is Sora.
Oh, I would love it. Yeah, themed Wordles. They'll get there. The fact that it's free right now is like busted. Like, or that there's no ads also. I'm like, this is going to get bought up by someone. No, but all that just to say, I would like to re-chat some Delicious in Dungeon, which is a manga that I chat some a little while back. And it's really, really good. I've gone past the first arc. When I first discussed it, I described it as a sort of like D&D dungeoneering manga, but it's also about how you would cook and survive in a dungeon by eating monsters and the different ways you'd prepare them. But now the plot is going really interesting places too, and it's got like family and growing up stuff, and there's like some big lore, which I'm always a fan of. I'm like consumed by it. It's basically what I'm going to be reading for the rest of the month, and I hopefully will be caught up by February. So, Delicious in Dungeon, also in Japanese known as Dungeon Meshi, does not have an anime yet. It probably will at some point, but doesn't currently. So, reading. Magellan, can you wrap it up with your Delicious Chatsum this week?
Yeah, I just want to double down on my re-chatsum from last week of Dimension 20, because they just started a new season called the Starstruck Odyssey, which is their first like sci-fi on a ship season. This is it's a D&D actual play show on dropout.tv, Dimension 20. And they're playing a variant of D&D that's like a variant that was made for Star Wars by some people online. And they're doing it in a world based on the DM's mom's comic books that she wrote in the 80s, and it's fun, and the characters are very fun sci-fi concepts for characters. So that's a strong recommend. And then something new. I've been reading a book recently. I can't remember how long ago I chat some 99 Variations on a Proof, which is that book where Philip Ording, this mathematics professor, basically shows 99 different variations on a proof, but they're all kind of stylistic interpretations of how to present and talk about mathematics, centered on one polynomial, you know, proof that he's trying to prove. And that book was inspired by a work by, I believe you pronounce his name, Raymond Queneau, or Queneau or something like that, who's a French author in like the mid-century. And one of his most famous works is what I started reading recently called Exercises in Style, which is a book where Queneau takes the same kind of blasé, mundane anecdote about something random and kind of strange he saw on the bus, and he tells the story in 99 different ways. And some of them are like normal storytelling styles. Some of them are like figures of speech. Some of them are like strange cryptographic ways to shuffle up the letters and encode things. Some of them are surreal. And it's just a really interesting meditation on how to take the same series of events and spin it and present it in a bunch of different ways. So if that sounds interesting, Exercises in Style is the book for you.
Exercises in Style.
Yeah.
Damn, we're getting literary out here, folks. Something, oh, yeah. Something fucked I also just realized is all three of our chatsums in some way involve going back to something that we have explored before. And also that's what this show is about.
Where it all began.
Anyways, folks, thank you, Magellan, for being my business rival and bitter enemy.
Keanu Reeves singing No Stars.
God, that would have been so good.
Yes, indeed. And
missed opportunity.
The most missed. Thank you to Ryan for being the person eavesdropping on my date with the coroner. thank you so very much for listening to this episode of Peaks Chats. And that was a damn fine podcast.